You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B. You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
I am doing great now that I'm with you, Lexi. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so excited to have this conversation. Before we get started, I really want to tell people how we met. Do you remember how we met?
I do.
I want to hear your version of the story.
I'm standing in front of a room of about maybe 200 or so people. And your face obviously stands out because there are facial expressions I can see as I'm talking and sharing. And then, if I'm not mistaken, during a break, you came to me in the back of the room and introduced yourself and said, hi, we're going to be friends. I'm going to let you know who I am. And I think this is the week that I fell on the stage in front of everybody. Is that right, Lexi?
That did happen. Yes. I was so intrigued by you. For folks who don't know, you know, we have all these large companies and they do all these things, as you know. But people never really talk about the process of integrating new hires into a large company, which is actually very, very difficult. And I don't care what level of new hire you are. I'm talking about you could be the 19-year-old intern at the copy center and you could be the next CEO. There's just information that you have to know in order to start your journey at this company. And I'm not going to lie to you, Fred, and I think I've told you this. I've worked at many companies. And new hire orientation usually sucks. It is not fun. It is not glamorous. There's a whole lot of paperwork. You know, you got to bring your passport and all your identification papers. I feel like everybody asks you so many questions, they might as well just take my blood to get the blood type. And watching you on that stage was the first time where I was like, wow, they found someone who can make this journey and this transition not just bearable, but actually phenomenal. And that's why I went up to you, because I was like, I don't know what you're drinking. I don't know what's in your sauce and your salad, but you need to keep doing what you're doing, because I've been doing this a lot. I've been in the audience a lot. And this is the first time where I am actually actively engaged and excited to continue this multi-hour transition.
Means a lot. Thank you.
So as we get into this, what is in your coffee cup? What are you drinking with us today?
So I don't do caffeine. Because you probably learned this about me, I'm high energy the way it is now. If I was drinking caffeine, I would be speaking in tongues and you would have to chase me around somewhere. So no caffeine, but I do love myself a little bit of hot water in the morning. A little orange juice is great. And as of late, I've been doing fruit smoothies, just whatever random fruits in the fridge your kids won't eat, stick it in a blender. And it's like, all right, I got my fruit, I got my fiber, I'm good for the day.
I do love a good smoothie, Fred. I do love a good smoothie. So this caffeine situation, is there a funny story about how you learned about caffeine is not for you? Or you just always was like, that's just not for me?
So I should say, I do drink caffeine, but not in the morning. Because in the morning is when I have my highest energy. So that's when it doesn't align. But I always got feedback I spoke too fast. And I started realizing it was in the morning when I would stop by for a cup of coffee or have some tea. Or, you know, because I'm American and Coke Zero in the morning. Whatever it was like, oh, yeah, I probably should stop doing that. That's probably not the best thing for me. So I can have caffeine later in the day. But in the morning, it really is a no caffeine situation.
I'm glad you said that, because I think that we, in this podcast, we're always talking about feedback. And the fact that like someone sat down with you and said, yo, you sound like you are on speed. What's up, fam? And then you identified it and then you course corrected, because that's not how you want it to sound. And I want to honor that. I think it's a wonderful, just really small example of when people who love you, respect you, are safe with you, give you feedback, what happens when you actually course correct? So where are your people from, Fred? How did Fred get here? Where are your people from?
This is a fun question. I love that. We talked about this. I identify as Chinese Indonesian because as it's told to me from my parents and the family history we have, family came from, I believe, southern China, and they were pirates in the spice trade. You know, I don't know what we did, but I'm sure it wasn't kosher. We somehow ended up in Indonesia, the Spice Islands.
I love how they were pirates, not sailors, not traders, but pirates. Like, oh my goodness, your people are sexy. Continue.
Right. And you know me, theatrical background. So my mind is thinking, the musical about our family starts on a pirate ship, and all of us in this amazing Chinese opera outfits, but in glitter, as singing about, you know, kidnapping people and taking cloves and white pepper to, you know, whatever it is. Anyway.
I love this. I love this. Oh my God, you are a descendant of pirates. Okay, keep going.
And we end up in Indonesia for a few generations. And then mom and dad immigrated to the U.S. to come to school. So funny story is, mom and dad grew up in the same town, but on opposite sides of the train tracks. Mom came from a privilege, dad did not. Dad had it rough. They both got scholarships to attend schools in the U.S. Dad started out in D.C., mom was started in Southern California. Little island boy from Indonesia could not handle it in the snow as one could. So he left his scholarship and moved to Southern California. And as luck would have it, there was a Indonesian Catholic youth group that mom and dad both went to, because they went to different universities. And they fell in love. And fast forward, I ended up on the scene. But now I also call my people, the extended family. I just came back from a trip from Long Island where my Chinese Indonesian cousins married Italian Polish families. And then my wife, as you know, is Italian, British Isles, everybody in Irish background. So I now include all that into my familial homelands. And our little mixed race babies, when we were in Ireland this summer, proudly told people we're Irish, and it gave them the most gave the people the most puzzling looks. And I just smiled and said, "Those are my girls. Let's start that conversation. Let's fuck with their minds and let's have that conversation to break down barriers."
It might have been as crazy as when I went to Ireland for work for the first time. And I told everybody that I was Irish. And it was hilarious. Because for the record, folks, I am Irish. And it was hilarious to watch these, you know, white Irish people. Very nice people.
Yeah.
Very nice people.
Yeah.
Never thought of it. And fun fact, you know, my last name, my full last name, is actually the name of a very prominent coffee and chocolate factory in Ireland.
Oh, that's right. It is.
It is. Yeah. And so I would go in there and I'd put down my credit card to get the coffee or, you know, whatever I was getting that morning on the way to work. And they would give it to me for free because they were like, "Oh,
you must be related.
You're a butler." And I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I am related to that family, but for the sake of this free drink, yes, I am a cousin. I went to the Guinness Museum, which for the record, if you are ever in Dublin, you need to go to the Guinness Museum. I don't even like beer, and it was the coolest experience. And when I was there, it turns out the head brewer of Guinness,
yeah,
his last name is Butler.
Oh my goodness.
And so on my tour, when they found out, they were like, "You have to meet him." And I was like, "Yes." And so I shared my first and only Guinness, because I do not like beer, yeah, with the head brewer of Guinness.
I love it.
Global.
Love it.
Whose also last name was Butler. And I have a picture with him. And we tell people that we're cousins. And it was really fun. So yes.
Why didn't I know this? Because then you could have when we were there.
Ireland has a special place in my heart. And so now every time that I go, I always stop by the Guinness Museum to see if he's there. And it's like our thing. So yes, shout out to the Irish. Yes.
Okay. I could have been with the Guinness Museum story. So I was at work. My wife, the kids over. I asked my youngest at the end of the day, "What was your favorite part? Or what did you think? What did you learn about today?" Right. And her story was, Mrs. Guinness had 22 kids, but only 11 survived. Pause a beat. "You must have drank too much beer." And I was like, "You're maybe not wrong. You're maybe not wrong."
Out of the mouths of children, which is probably accurate. Right.
It wasn't the advertising, like the giant fish on a bicycle that was moving. It wasn't that, you know, Guinness smells bitter. It was that Mrs. Guinness had 22 kids.
Out of a four-hour tour, this is what she decided. Which I think is very important because as a woman thinking about children and what that actually means right now in my life, like, your daughter's right. This woman had 22 children. And what I love about your daughter, because I know them, is that they don't even understand the magnitude of physical labor that is. Like, this woman legit had 22 children in a span of not that long. So, like, she was just always pregnant.
I can't imagine. I cannot even imagine what that would be like.
That sounds awful.
Terrible. Like, how do you function as a human, right? Like, how do you, you know, just keep the basic things going or try to achieve more? Or like, how do you raise your other kids? You got 22 of them.
I don't know.
Like, what do you do?
I think we need to have like a moment of pause for Mama Guinness, because basically because of women, we are. And because of this woman, you have the international home known as Guinness. But everybody should go to the Guinness Museum. They have the largest pint in the world in the middle of the museum. It's a really cool curated space. Even if you do not like beer, like myself, it's actually really cool.
That's right. That's right.
So we are here not to talk about Guinness, but to talk about something very important, which is burnout, which I think in the past 10 years has now been more publicly spoken about. But as you and I both know, burnout is aligned to just human nature since the first day of our times. And I want to talk to you and first ask you, when was the first time that you even heard the term burnout, or you felt it and you were like, what is this?
You know, this may surprise you, but I think it was 2020 when I felt I've heard it before. And I think of the toxic positivity of how I was raised, at least living in the United States. You can overcome it. It's just a state of mind. You know, catch your breath, suck it up, and keep going. I didn't feel until 2020. So by this point, right, had two kids. We've moved 4 times in the span of 2 years because life was unstable.
That's a lot, Fred. You know, moving, death, and what is it? Having a child and getting married, I think, are like the 4 major pillars of stress.
Oh, and then the world was falling apart and burning outside for many reasons, right? Mm. All of that happened. And I think that's when I finally was able to take a beat and go, oh, I know what burnout is. I understand. I get it.
I want to ask you about the toxic positivity. I have a question for you. And please let me know if I'm wrong. Because you are a first generation American, so you come from immigrants. And many immigrants have this story of their parents working, 18 times harder because they're immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that toxic positivity comes from your parents trying to make it work?
I think so. I mean, not all of it, definitely, right? I think that's where it's first introduced, because there's a story of, I, as your mom or dad, had to overcome this hardship. I had to stand up to your grandparents to say, I don't want this life in this country. I want something else. And then hearing the stories of how they, like many immigrants, my mom and dad started a restaurant. They didn't cook, but they helped manage a restaurant as they were pursuing their education. And if you've ever been in the restaurant or the food service industry, you know that's a 24/7 industry, especially if you're the proprietors or you're close to that space. There is no off. There is no day off. There is no holiday. So I appreciate that sacrifice. I acknowledge that sacrifice. And I think that feeling, I guess I'll call it guilt, comes from that too, really. I was raised Catholic, and think of it, immigrant guilt, but the heaping of Catholic guilt on top of it. There's a lot of, I have to achieve because other people sacrificed before me, other people endured before me. And I think the word endured, I would add, endured in silence. Right? No one ever expressed how frustrating it was or had support for the mental health to go through that. It was just grin and bear it. Suck it up, put on a helmet, buttercup, keep on going. So yeah.
Yeah. I ask because as a Black American, descendant of enslaved Africans, the older I get and the more I unpack a lot of that, I'm realizing that growing up, I had family members who would do the positive toxicity of like, everything's fine. Be grateful that you're alive, right? And for the record, to some extent, I agree with that because I come from a very long line of like violent trauma of like people being murdered. So like the baseline, I agree. I am very grateful that I am alive, right? But that doesn't take away the struggles it is of existing. And then I came from this other side of thought from some elders, which is like, you just have to work hard. You complaining is wasting time. And I think many times complaining was the theme of actual burnout or mental health awareness, right? Okay. So what happened in 2020 specifically, whether it was at work or at home? It sounds like there was a lot going on, but what was that moment where you were like, yo, this is real for me?
It was a combination of, working in the onboarding space, figuring, oh shit, we have to figure out a way to onboard, X amount of people, but we have to do it not together. We have to invest in technology that we haven't invested before. We have to solve these problems we haven't solved. And oh, by the way, we have to do it like really quickly because if we don't get these people through, there's going to be a traffic jam and it's going to slow down the growth of the company that we work for. Like, what do we do? What do we do in that space? It was the reality of going to the grocery store, seeing empty shelves, and the nastiness of humanity trying to get that last apple or get that last roll of toilet paper. And people willing to do it to each other to get that. And I get it, right? Because we all have to wipe our butts. I get it. Desperation became that moment, but the nastiness that came out of that moment. And then because I was living in Southern California, watching the horrors of what happened to George Floyd and people who looked like George Floyd, right? And then his murder was going through. And then shortly thereafter, experiencing not that level of degree of hate, but the nastiness of hate because of the color of my skin, because of the perceived origins of the pandemic. So all of that, while then trying to homeschool two children.
Young children. These are not like teenagers who know how to get on their laptop and write the essay.
That's right. No, like one, the youngest was still learning to read and spell. I mean, that's where we were. And then, you know, oh, by the way, working 18-hour days. And then you know this too, Lexi. Trying to work with the extended family to help them understand why this moment's important. Why we need them to show up different from their maybe Italian and Polish backgrounds. It's like, hey, we're going to need you to learn this real quick because there's a lot going on around the identities of your grandbabies. And although you perceive them to be your grandbabies, everyone else, when they see you out in public, are going to go, why are those Elysian kids with a white family? What's that story?
Yeah. And I do also want to make note, because we have listeners all over the globe, that people really do think California is very liberal. Let me tell y'all, there are pockets.
There are pockets.
We still have sundown towns in California.
That's right.
There are some very conservative and very racist pockets of this very large state.
and recently they've been empowered to share all the things that be inside their head out loud to you while you're trying to grocery shop or trying to have lunch with your family. It comes out.
When you felt it and then you clearly identified it and you were like, oh, yep, this is what this feel. I can verbalize this, what this feeling is. How do we start to unpack that? How do we start to make it better for you? I can only imagine, you know, you as a parent, as a father, as a husband, as a friend, as a worker, the more burnt out you are, the worse you are in all those places.
The stress begot the stress, right? There was no way to succeed or win. I mean, here's what I'll say. During that time, the companies we worked for were really thoughtful about and created lots of opportunity to take care of oneself. So, you know, blessings to my to the company I worked for. They allowed me to be on leave 3 days a week. So I was doing orientation Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I was on leave, not at work, so I could homeschool the kids so that my wife didn't have the burden of doing that by herself. So really thankful there was a lot of deep care at that. I grew up in a family where we didn't speak about our feelings. In fact, I remember my parents, and I harbor no ill will toward them for this, but very often they said, I don't care about your feelings whenever there was an argument or fight, right? I'm going to school, we're learning how to talk about our feelings and tell our feelings, but at home, feelings didn't matter. Mom and dad were in charge and that was it. So when I went to college and became a resident assistant, one of the things I learned in RA training was, hey, there's a counseling center. Counseling is part of a healthy part of people's development. It's okay to come. And I thought, you know what? I'm doing this because I want to be an exempt for my students, for my floor mates. I don't know what this is about. I don't know if I can recommend it. Let me go to it so I can learn if this is good and I can learn how it'll help me. So I've been in and out of counseling my adult life. At that moment, I realized, oh, I got to go back. It's time. I got to go back, right? Lacey can't be the only person, my wife, can't be the only person that I unload with or try to process. She's working through her list of challenges right now because we're all trying to just be at this moment, right? So I go to counseling. And for a while that worked, Lexi. Being able to step away from work to give more energy to the family part of it worked. But I think as I learned, your companies only care about you so much because they only care about you for the bottom line. And then when it doesn't help the bottom line anymore, then they're going to start caring a little bit less.
Because notice how your days off weren't the days that we needed you to perform.
Correct. Correct.
And again, I do want to honor the fact that they did that and paid you your full salary is a big deal. Many companies won't. I do want to honor that in this moment.
Yep.
But also notice how they still got what they needed from you. they figured out a way for them to prioritize the labor and the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then just give you some time to figure it out so you don't leave.
Correct. Because at that point, the thought of hiring somebody, right, and onboarding them in that space probably wasn't going to be great. And at that time, let's see, I was doing Zoom calls with like hundreds of people, not like 100, like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, to the point where we had to sometimes break up the Zoom calls and have other people leading because we actually were going to break Zoom and its capabilities. If we didn't.
Y'all were breaking the Zoom, Fred. You were breaking the Zoom.
You all had Zoom outages in 2020, 2021. Apologies. That was probably us and our program. They will be breaking the Zoom at the time. Yeah. Yeah. And again, it was great. And, you know, I think I volunteered that. I was the one who said, hey, you know what? Could, if we make this arrangement, could I do it? Because again, there was that sense of, I want to help. I know this is tied to the success of the company and therefore tied to the success of me. Let me do it. In that moment in time, should I have said that? I don't know. I think it was right in the moment. But there was definitely a time where I wish I advocated for myself and said, hey, I'd like to renegotiate the terms of this lead.
So what do you think they would have been if you renegotiated?
I think earlier on, closer to 2020, the answer would have been yes. But as we went in 2021, 2022, it obviously would have been no.
But what would have the terms be negotiated? Would it be like, because right now it was working those first 2 days, which for the record, and correct me if I'm wrong, even before COVID, your Monday, Tuesday was the most important of your days. And your Wednesday, Thursday, Friday was just cleaning up what happened Monday, Tuesday.
That's right.
Okay. So if we could renegotiate looking back, what do you think you would have tried to say? This is what I want to do and how can I help you?
I would have asked for more help to say, hey, I can't do it every Monday, Tuesday.
Got it. Okay.
I need, because again, it's that energy. If I only have 5 fucks to give a day, and Monday, Tuesday, I'm giving 4 of them to work, is that fair to my family? But on the flip side, you know, I get it. Work is paying me, so I'm able to give to my family. So there's that balance. But I think what I, so getting a little ahead of the story, but what I've discovered since that time is, my sense of value and worth is not attached to my work or job title, even though I was raised to believe that's how it should be. Because when we meet new people, what do we do, Lexi?
Where do you work?
Where do you work? Who are you? Where are you from? Where do you work? What do you do for work? I find myself now going like, that's not the most important thing I'm going to lead with. Like, because that job, yes, pays for my life, but it doesn't define who I am. And in that moment that I want somebody to get to know who I am, that's not what they need to know, right? It's like, they need to know that I'm a father. They need to know that I care about social issues. They need to know that I live in a world where I have to navigate what mask I put on every day with who, and that I care about them. If I'm going to spend time for you, me to show you who I am, I want you to right off the bat, I care about you. You can break.
And they also need to know that your daughter did a almost 6-hour beer tour. And what she got out of it was that woman birthed 22 kids. Because that's an important data point.
That is an important data point. And, you know, also while we were there, we took the kids to Temple Bar. Best of, but you know what? It was a cultural moment and we didn't know we were going to be back. So let's do it. Why not? That's cool. But yeah.
What are your tips and tricks for people to really navigate their own burnout? Because I also think that burnout is a social capitalist construct. I think one of the reasons why people find value in your work and that's it, is because capitalism has raised us to believe that. I was watching a documentary last year on Hulu, which I highly recommend for everyone. And I forgot the name of it, but I'll put it in the show notes, where it talked about how America from a capitalist society was created. So we're talking about the Vanderbilts, we're talking about the Carnegies, we're talking about all these names that you see on buildings, but you really don't know how we got here. And of course, in that story, it was talking about how unions were created, because at one point in time, people were working 20-hour days, and it literally took groups, thousands, millions of people to stand up and strike and say, I actually deserve 8 hours of sleep. I deserve 8 hours to do whatever I want, and then I'll come work for you for 8 hours. It's 2023. The idea of that concept to us is not new. It's like, well, of course. But millions of people died in order for this to happen. Millions of people in coal mines, millions of people working on the railroads. This was not an easy concept for millionaires and billionaires and conjillionaires to get into. And I think that's why we're having a lot of conversations of understanding our relationship to labor, because since that time, labor is the most important thing. So what do you tell people? What do you think when people come to you and say, I'm having a hard time, or my favorite line is like, I'm just really tired lately, which now I'm like, that means they're burnt out. That's what they have said.
Yeah.
How do you help peers, your family, blood and chosen to really, for them to advocate for themselves like you did and say, this ain't it. I don't know what is it, but this ain't it. And I have to relearn my relationship to this labor. I'm not saying that I don't want to do the labor. I'm not saying that I want to be lazy. I'm saying that how in which we are doing it today can no longer continue.
Like everything wonderful in my life, I have to credit my wife. A while back, she asked me, do you want to work to live or live to work? Because that's going to guide the decisions you're going to make here, right? It's like, how do you choose to live your life? And at the time, I don't think I fully appreciated and understand what she was trying to surface in my conversation, right? But in 2022, it all came to head. I really had to sit there and go, I choose to live, and I choose work to be a means in which I can live. And in order to do that, I need to step away from work right now. One of the hardest conversations and decisions I had to make with myself is I have to ask for help in a very big way. Now, thankfully, I got primed in 2020 to be able to ask. But in this case, this was that environment where it would impact my career by asking for this help, by asking for this time to step away. Even though everybody said it's going to be okay, it won't impact your performance evaluation, it won't impact that perception of you, it absolutely did. Do I regret it? Absolutely not. Because I had to step away. I had to step away and choose myself. It also, Lexi, took me to realize, okay, counseling is fantastic for me, but it may not be enough. And I may need the help of a psychiatrist to get medication.
Let's talk about that. Because I think a lot of people now, you know, 2023... therapy and counseling is the new word. It's the buzzword. But let's go deeper into that, because I agree with you. Counseling is important. Counseling for everyone. Therapy for everyone.
Yep. Universal right.
Universal right. But I do think we still don't talk about it. It's like this taboo thing about a psychiatrist. So what's the difference?
Yeah, I'm not an expert in this, but a psychiatrist is someone with a medical degree who is able to work with a therapist who may not have an official medical degree. They may have social work degrees or whatnot. To prescribe medications and supervise you using medications that are mood altering or impact the chemistry of your brain. That was hard because, not that I'm against science, right? I mean, I was the one volunteering to get shots into arms in 2021 when that became available. But it was hard for me to go like, I need this pill. I don't want to become dependent on this pill. And again, through my therapist and my psychiatrist, like, no, this is just a tool to help you. You have expressed you need this help. You've proven you need this help to yourself. This is how we can help you. And when I started talking to my what I call my board of directors, my real close friends and families, I was amazed to hear every single one of them was taking medication.
Whether or not you knew that before, it sounds like you had a dinner and they were like, oh yeah, okay. And it rained on Sunday. Next topic. Like, yeah,
And it was that aha moment for me. You know, even though I think of myself as a liberal and educated individual, I was like, oh, this is okay, right? So then by the time I get my medication, I'm happy to take it because I know it's going to help me. And it did. It really did. Imagine that.
I feel like you and I both, because we're relatively the same age, are in this, I call it the transition generation. We come from the parents and the grandparents of like, work 3-4 times as hard to get what you want. You coming to Sunday family dinner saying you are the VP of XYZ is really, really, really important. And I feel like we are the transition generation of saying like, I guess if me becoming the VP of XYZ is important to me, then sure, it's important. but I really want to focus on what like legit is actually important to me and how I define that. With you doing all of this work and being so just beautifully public about it, which is what I think we all need, like your friends with the pills, when you told them and they were like, yeah, water is wet. Like what? you just got on them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What do you think that's going to encourage, challenge, and push people like your girls for the next generation? Yeah. Because Fred, I don't know if you ever worked with a Gen Zer, but they are different, okay? They are different. And mm-hmm. I tell folks, mm-hmm. I'm like, the Gen Zers are out here living, working to live. They're like, write my check. Tell me what you want to do. But you are not paying me enough to give my life to your dream. And I find it fascinating. I find it liberating. I find it hilarious to watch them challenge the old guard. What do you think you doing this publicly is going to inspire in your babies when they get grown?
I pray to God that it breaks the stigma down. My babies and their friends don't have to wait till they're 37, 38 to figure this shit out. That this is a, hey, I'm about to go into high school. And you know what? I'm feeling these feelings of a lot of pressure. I'm not sure what I need. I'm going to go. I'm going to ask my mom and dad to up my therapy time. So I think I want to work this out with therapy. And I'm going to be okay if the answer is we're going to work with your psychologist because we're going to give you this medication to help you overcome some of this. We're going to help you see a different perspective of this. I want them to feel that early so that when they become adults, they know what tools are in their disposal to help them. And they spend less time waffling and struggling for help. That, you know, yeah, you have that crisis moment to identify that you need help, but then you run to get that help. You're not sitting there trying to hide it. You're not trying to pretend it's going to be okay. Because I don't know about you, but I've had a lot of friends in college who struggled, dropped out, but stayed in their college town so they could keep up the appearances to mom and dad and family that they were still in college.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So like they were going home for holiday break talking about, yeah, math 203 was great, even though they were not enrolled.
Because if they were first generation college students, their parents didn't know how you pay tuition to the bursar at the beginning of the year. They didn't know. They just gave money and said, look, you figured this out, right? You know this. And in the meantime, they were working as a waiter or waitress at the cafe in town.
How does that translate to graduation when mom and dad show up with balloons and stuff?
That's when the conversation had to happen, either before then or right.
Whew, that sounds terrifying, Fred. That sounds terrifying.
I don't want the girls to feel like they have to hide that from us. You know, maybe not something that big, something as simple as, hey, I really, you know, this math class is whooping my butt. I can't get my head around this. Let's have a conversation. You know, does this mean you get extra support? It doesn't mean I love you any less, which I think I equated in my mind to you saying, oh, shoot, if I don't pass this with an A, mom and dad or you know, grandma, grandpa, or Auntie Susie, whatever, are going to be mad at me because I don't have VP next to my title. Or that I didn't graduate magna, summa, cum laude, whatever it is, right? It fell.
Which you would also argue, though, the sooner they ask for help in that math class, the greater likelihood they will actually pass it with a better grade.
That's right.
So actually, by them asking for help, may get them the A.
Instead of having all that anxiety, it's just, hey, here's what it is. And then the other part of it too is asking for help also means taking a long, hard look at what you're doing and figuring out if it's still right for you. I credit you to a large degree to help me understand this is as much as they want to work for that company because I care about the mission or I care about the people I work for, if the situation you're in no longer works for you, it doesn't work for you.
You can see those people at brunch, fam. You can see them at brunch.
That's right. And I, you know what? I'm happy to heart their posts on Instagram and catch up with them a few times a year. It's wonderful. But if that situation doesn't work anymore, it just doesn't work anymore, right? And developing that courage, which I don't think I'm there yet, but developing that courage to get yourself out of that situation.
Last question for you. What do you think about people? I hear a lot, you know, on the internet streets, on Beyonce's internet, and when people talk about therapy and how, you know, gentle parenting or gentler parenting towards these kids allowing them to feel these emotions and things like that. And there's a lot of naysayers who basically say we can't do that because it's the exact opposite of resilience. For the record, Fred, I am a strong believer as a Black American woman that I would not be where I am without my resilience. I think that kids need to learn resilience. Like, just because you fall today does not mean you don't get back on the bike, right? Just because someone says you can't do it does not mean you don't go try. And that's how I define resilience. You as a parent, as a person who's dealt with burnout and are actively overcoming it, what do you say to those people when they may say to you, well, you're not teaching them resilience?
I'm not going to teach resilience when it's really endurance. Because I think when I'm hearing people say that, it's endurance. Resilience is being able to see yourself as a human being in a whole system, acknowledging the feelings, feeling the feelings, and then figure out what to do next. That's okay. Endurance is, I think, what people think resilience is. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to be resilient by enduring this hardship, by just, you know, I'm just going to plow through. No, not to say that endurance doesn't have its place, because there are times you're going to have to endure through.
You got to get through that race. Even if you finish last, you got to get through that race.
Exactly. But there is a difference between endurance and resilience. And it goes back to the idea of toxic positivity. How can I brand this hardship that I'm feeling in the most positive way so it becomes brownie points for me? It's like, no, the reality is you are enduring. How can you get from that state of endurance to then resilience? Because resilience is when you're able to go, you know what? This role isn't working for me anymore. What can I do to change this?
And that doesn't mean that you fall back in your career or you become lazy or you're in your bed for 8 months crying and depressed. And by the way, that also can mean that's part of your journey as well.
That's right. Okay? Exactly. Absolutely.
I love a good bed cry sesh. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes you need it.
Well, I'm worried if somebody says they don't like that. Like, do you have a heart? Do you feel feel?
Especially if you get the good sheets, like your bed can be a place of comfort. But I really loved how you said that endurance versus resilience, because recently I've been really trying to fight that with people, especially having conversations with about the little ones and how they're growing up. And I'm like, just because people are being more open in their parenting to allow children to feel these feelings does not mean these kids are weak in any capacity. It just means they can identify certain things. And through that identification, they can then actively decide what they want to do next, right? They can say, I feel this. I do not like this feeling. And then they can ask for help to say, okay, so how are we going to not feel that way?
When you do feel that way, what are you going to do as a response?
Exactly.
I think, you know, I know we're not a parenting podcast, but I think that's where we as parents can really help. It's like, hey, beyond just identifying the feeling, it's in helping them take action on that feeling. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What does it look like?
I love it.
And obviously, what a caveat, constructive. And then the other thing I'll say is, the other part for success for me, I heard from a manager that I really respect and my mentor, there is no such thing as work-life balance. Let's throw that word balance out. That was a 1980s term. Again, to market toxic positivity.
It's not a thing, family. It is not a thing.
I call it the work-life rhythm. The rhythm changes depending on the phase of life whom you're in. And it's acknowledging, like, hey, right now, I'm going to need to do 18-hour days. But this is not forever. Or it's like, hey, going back to the example earlier, I have 5 fucks a day. I'm not giving enough to what I actually love about. How do I change this to give more fucks to what I care?
And I think the rhythm has to align with the value and the goal. Because if you tell me, Lex, I'm working 18-hour days, but this is not forever, my response is going to be, so what's the timeline and why? Because if you're like, well, I'm working 18-hour days now because if I put in this work, if I put in this hustle, then that will calculate to this thing that will help all of us in 6 months. Okay, cool. Because, you know, humans, resilience and endurance, we can endure craziness in a timeline, in a finite timeline. It's when you do the craziness in an infinite amount of time where things get not good. But you being able to express that, I think, is important.
And let me be clear, too. By giving less fucks to work doesn't mean my work is any less quality. Right? It's really how am I spending my time to create that output, not the output itself. Because I think the other part too is, at least when I was in college, I was taught just put in the hours. If you put in the hours, it'll happen. Like, no, there comes a point where it's like you actually need skill and competence to do that job. So earn and learn is the skill you need to be competent, and then figure out a way to be competent in a time frame that doesn't just take up hours and hours every day. No one ever says, wow, Lexi, you did a great job responding to your emails. That's going to, you know, all hours you spent is going to help you. No, that's not it. It's like, hey, how can I be strategic about this? How can I prioritize? How can I figure out the way around the ambiguities to get through this? So develop that skill because you want to spend time doing other things.
And I would like to acknowledge that sometimes in order to get that skill, you actually have to do the hustle and spend the hours on everything because you're not born with strategy. So sometimes you actually, in the early stages of your career, you have to do the hustle. You have to do the grind, and you're doing it to build skills, values, understand yourself, and understand the chessboard of corporate life. To then, 3-4 years into your career, you can make more creative moves.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And remember, that corporate life, they do not care about you. They'll care about you for the extent of your output, like we said earlier. But at the end of the day, you are replaceable. And the sooner we all embrace that and go, yeah, okay, it makes it easier to say, this is no longer my hustle. This is no longer where I can best be helpful. I gotta go.
Well, on that note, friend, thank you so much for being here and being so vulnerable and honest in this conversation.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invite.
You can listen to You Can Sit With Us episodes on Spotify. For more information, visit our website, lexib.com, and our LinkedIn account at LexiB. And make sure to follow our podcasts on Instagram @SitWithLexiB. And don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify channel.